everybody here. So stay in tune, cause it's gonna be Flair this afternoon.
Hi, this is Dick Van Dyke welcoming you to Flair. Right now, Milt Kamen.
With social philosophy for his text, Milt Kamen is aiming to lecture now.
This is Milt Kamen speaking for Flair. Of course, we've been reading about Africa in the news almost every day now. But I remember reading something very interesting about the Sudan, which is in Africa, and the English at one time controlled the Sudan. And during the time they controlled it, the natives fought back in a most peculiar way against the English leadership there. They used to have a phrase in the Sudan, and it was, "The truth lies in the desert." That's what all the Sudanese people used to say to each other, "The truth lies in the desert." Well, many Englishmen who were running the country there would hear this phrase, you know, and they would say, "What does that mean, truth lies in the desert?" But the Sudanese would never say anything. They'd simply look through the desert and say, "The truth lies in the desert." Well, after many years, a number of Englishmen began to look to the desert, and sure enough, they would go out there looking for the truth, and no one ever heard from them again. They would die out there. And that was the whole joke. The Sudanese were killing them. They were simply saying the truth lies in the desert. There was nothing in the desert, just sand. And they drove the English crazy.
Says they all laughed, which is a good review for a show, unless, of course, the show is Oedipus Rex.
They all laughed at Christopher Columbus when he said the world was round. They all laughed when Edison recorded sound. They all laughed at Wilbur and his brother when they said that man could fly. Marconi, why this was a phony, it's the same old cry. They laughed at me, warning you that I was reaching for the moon. But oh, you came through, now they'll have to change their tune. They all said we never could be happy, they laughed at us and how.
Expert Bess Meyerson says fashions imitate art. And if that's the case, I hope we men get a choice between September Morn and Whistler's Mother.
Well, bless. Guess what she has for word or two about something new for housewives everywhere.
This is Bess Meyerson for Flair. Does life imitate art or does art imitate life? This is as yet an unanswered question. However this may be, fashion this year certainly has decided to imitate art, from the theater to movies to painting. Actually, this isn't particularly new. Back around the turn of the century, the Gibson Girl look originated from the famous illustrations of the Gibson Girls and has since become a classic. But the season since the arts has been felt as strongly as it is in this one. The movie Lawrence of Arabia has brought forth a whole integrated line of fashions, and the chic look, spelled S-H-E-I-K, is definitely headlining the fashion stage. There is a chic makeup available that will help you cultivate that mysterious look. Turbans wrapped around your head, scarves floating from shoulders and hats, and desert colors, sandy beige, dusty pastels, and off-white. If you're a junior miss, the new musical Oliver has set a trend for you. Suits with a boyish flavor, bow ties, and round hats are its contribution to the fashion scene. Last but not least, the arrival of that great mysterious lady, the Mona Lisa, has had its effect. You can have a Mona Lisa hairdo and wear her smile. So you see, this year you can play pretend. Between the smile of the Mona Lisa and the half-smile of the Sphinx, we should have the male world in a thorough uproar. So have fun while it lasts.
Thanks, Beth. Time to page Flair's book expert, Professor Carl Schmidt. Noteworthy, sing him a little preface, if you will.
Time for a skit by Professor Carl Schmidt from New Books Reviewed for Flair.
Mr. Seidman, you go to a geisha party. You'll have something really to remember about Japan. For Flair, capsule reviews of current books. This is Professor Carl Schmidt, a teacher of interpretative reading at the University of Wisconsin. Mr. Seidman takes his friend's advice and accompanies him to a geisha party. He's charmed by the girls, one in particular, but irritated by the way his Japanese host seems to insult the geishas. Can you imagine? He calls this beautiful girl plain and awkward. It's getting a little ridiculous already, like you would stand in front of the Venus de Milo and say, "Poor girl, she's got stumpy arms." I would like to say to him, "You people copied so much from us already. Why don't you copy something good for a change? To pamper the women a little doesn't cost you anything. Doesn't lure you to realize a girl, even if she's beautiful, likes to hear sometimes a compliment." I sound like an old fool, huh? Well, it's going to get worse. Much worse. I don't know if you could stand it. The title, Mr. Seidman and the Geisha. The author, Alec Maul. The publisher, Simon & Schuster. A warm and gentle, humorous book.
The high road, and I'll take the low road, and when the twain meet, there are the high lows.
Believe me.
Leonard Wade has a pork recipe he picked up in Hawaii. Now, don't tell me it's a roast suckling pig with a pineapple in its mouth.
Be at home on the range and cook for a change with a flair and a fancy or two. So here's David Wade, who's come to your aid with a recipe perfect for you.
Can you imagine the ums and ahs, the lip-smacking that went on as Columbus and his men first tasted ripe pineapples in Guadalupe after weeks on the Atlantic eating sea biscuits and salted fish? Natives standing nearby must have referred to its South African name, anana, meaning excellent fruit. For to this day, ananas is the word for pineapple in many European countries. Fresh pineapple is still a rich man's treat in Europe, but here in the United States, we can all afford it, and what an important role it plays in the food concert that I've selected for our presentation today on Flair, Pork Chops Hawaiian. Trim excess fat from 6 lean pork chops and marinate in 1/4 of a cup of soy sauce for about 20 minutes. Brown on both sides in the fat trimmed from the meat. Place the pork chops into a baking dish or a pan. Remove the skins from 3 medium boiled sweet potatoes. Cut in half lengthwise and place over the chops. Top with 6 fresh pineapple sticks. Add 1/4 of a cup of hot water and cover the baking dish securely. Bake in a 350-degree oven for about 30 minutes. Now peel 3 bananas and cut in half lengthwise or in smaller sections. Arrange the bananas over the potatoes and sprinkle 1 tablespoon of brown sugar on top. Now dot with 1 tablespoon of butter or margarine. Place this medley under a hot broiler and brown 3 to 5 minutes. Good living and bon appetit!
Bassey sings, "Let's Fall in Love." And the next question is, will you be my co-signer on a joint tax return?
Take a chance. Why be afraid of it?
Charles Arnault, Flair's correspondent in New Delhi, asks, do the Japanese and Germans make the best wives? Well, I don't know about that, but they sure make the best cameras.
He's a native of Nebraska, but he's always on the go. Everywhere for Flair, that's Charles Arnault.
There are many menfolk in this world who claim the Japanese and German women make the best wives because they are so resigned to male domination and only live to please their husbands. But here in India, I've discovered that the men dominate the household scene even more than in either Japan or Germany. What's more, the women seem to like it that way. Some Indian husbands who smoke even expect their wives to light their cigars or cigarettes, and the wives do it. Why are these Indian women so resigned to being dominated by their husbands? There are a half a dozen answers from the women and the men themselves. One young Indian wife says this system of male domination comes from the parents. Every Indian girl, she says, is brought up to think of her menfolk as superior. A girl here is trained to be meek, agreeable, and adopt an attitude of patient devotion toward her husband. Some other women say it's the husbands who insist on carrying on the ancient tradition of the supreme male. And why give up a good thing? From another Indian woman, I was told it's all part of Indian religion, the Oriental spirit of resignation, especially for a wife. Of course, there are so-called liberated Indian women who consider themselves their husband's equals. But the average Indian girl or matron does not rebel against her humble estate. She seems to feel that this was the arrangement followed by her mother, her grandmother, and all her maternal ancestors, and she really seems to like being dominated by her man. Charles Piano, ABC Flair, New Delhi.
Say on TV, with a song, he's loaded.
Just a little bit south of North Carolina, that's where I long to be. In a little brown shack in South Carolina, someone waits for me. In each letter she says that the weather is fine and the folks are feeling great. That the garden looks grand and the red rose vine is clinging to the gate. Just a little bit south of North Carolina, that's where my thoughts all stray. To the one I love best in South Carolina, I'm going back someday. I can hardly wait to see the face of the one I like. Just a little bit south of North Carolina, I'll find paradise.
Stan Freeman sings about a 20th century cowboy. That's the guy whose yippee-i-ohs get rerun in the summer.
The overture has started. The footlights are a-gleaming. Curtain going up on Mr. Stan Freeman.
For Flair, this is Stan Freeman. On this date in 1846, Buffalo Bill Cody was born in Iowa. He typified the romance of the frontier west, but the cowboy of today, I guess, sure sings a different tune. I'm a cowboy, a 20th century cowboy. Got a TV show for sale if someone wants her. As to how to rope a steer, I'm really not too clear. What you gotta know is how to rope a sponsor. I'm a cowboy, an adult modern cowboy. My saddle's lined with finest grade alpaca.
I'm a true sophisticate, and to prove I'm up to date, I only chew tip tobacco. When a cowboy used to be heading for the last roundup, it meant he was putting up his horse for adoption. But when the modern cowboy is heading for the last roundup, it means the sponsor didn't pick up his option. I'm a cowboy, a typical TV cowboy. I've been analyzed, I'm even controversial. Oh, I'm brave and I'm two-fisted, but in the TV lineup, I'm not listed. Oh, what I'd give to be ambushed by a commercial.
Here's Oscar Brand, the Ben Casey of folk songs, to probe the anatomy of another ballad.
Come all ye lovers of lore and legend, come from near and far, for a song and a story on Americana by Oscar Brand and his guitar.
Hello, this is Oscar Brand for Flair, and I have a problem. I know a very old song, and I know three different ways of singing it. And I like all the three different ways. It's called Come All Ye Fair and Tender Ladies. And here's one way to sing it.
Come all ye fair and tender ladies, be careful how you court young men. They're like the star in a summer's morning. First they appear and then they're gone.
Now there's another way of singing the song, which I also like.
Come all ye fair and tender ladies, be careful how you court young men. They're like a star in a summer's morning, first they appear and then they're gone.
And finally, there's a very, very spirited way of singing the same song.
Come all ye fair and tender ladies, be careful how you court young men. They're like a star in summer's morning. First they appear and then they're gone.
Yes, it's very hard to determine which way I should sing the song, but I know only one way of saying, this is Oscar Brand for Flair. The Kirby Stone Four sing Take Back Your Mink. That way, they won't have to cold store it until next fall.
Take back your mink.
You gotta be kidding.
Take back your crew.
Are you why, are you
what made you think that I was one of those girls?
She's screaming.
Take back the gun.
But I bought it for you.
The glove and the hat.
Now what'll I do?
Is familiar to all of us. One of the hit songs from the now famous Broadway production, My Fair Lady. But listening to and enjoying this music are people far removed from the lights and sounds of Manhattan. In fact, My Fair Lady is the first Broadway musical they've ever seen. How Broadway was transported to this faraway place is another example of America on the move.
Today, America's voice is heard around the world through words, pictures, and music. As more and more Americans go traveling, people of other countries are becoming familiar with our nation's cultural heritage. The proud image of our culture, our freedom, and our democratic independence is on the move to places and people as America's voice speaks.
The time, 1960. The place, Kiev, Russia. The people, local citizens and dignitaries of this Ukrainian capital city, and an all-American cast of My Fair Lady. Never in the history of the American theater has a Broadway show equaled the enthusiastic reception given My Fair Lady by an audience largely composed of non-English-speaking people. The show started its Russian tour in Moscow, where, a few hours after the box office was opened, all seats had been sold for a three-week run. On opening night, the audience applauded for 10 minutes after the final curtain. Here in Kiev, this 1960 production of My Fair Lady is repeating its Moscow and Leningrad successes. Two of the show's most popular numbers during this current tour have been the production Ascot Gavotte and the song Get Me to the Church on Time. In all three cities, the Russian audiences have liked the show so well, they seemingly could have applauded all night.
An American musical based on a British play and performed for a Russian audience gave new meaning and emphasis to the diversity and world recognition of our American cultural heritage.
You've been listening to Flair, a worldwide presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. We'll be right back.